Okay, welcome everybody to this evening's tele seminar called How to Use Your Mind for Success. My name is Damien Sen and I'm your host for this evening, so I'd just like to welcome you all to the call. Now before I actually introduce our very special guest, Topher Morrison, this evening, I thought I'd take this opportunity to just give you a little bit of a feel for how this call is going to work this evening. Now we're probably going to spend around an hour together this evening. And for the first 50 minutes, I will be asking Topher a series of different questions on how to actually use the mind for success. And in the final 10 minutes of the call, we're actually going to open the lines up for any questions that you may have. So as we're actually progressing through the call, if you do have a question that pops into your mind, if I can just ask you to just write that down on a piece of paper, and certainly when you get the opportunity at the end of the call, do embrace it. Now, in terms of the questions that I'm going to ask Topher, when people were registering for the call, I asked what was the biggest question that you had around using the mind for success. And I was absolutely inundated with questions from different people around using the mind for success. And what I've tried to do is arrange all these different questions into different themes, and basically on the basis of those themes, I'll be grilling Topher about different aspects of success in the mind. So hopefully over the course of the conversation your question will be answered in some way, shape or form. Now we're also very fortunate to be an international tele-seminar. We've got people registered in over 10 countries around the world. So whether you're in Australia, Belgium, Canada, Finland, France, Germany, South Africa, Sweden, the UK or the US of A, I'd just like to welcome you into the call wherever you are in the world this evening. Now without further ado, it gives me a great pleasure to welcome our special guest to the call this evening, Dr. Topher Morrison. Now Topher is a best-selling author, an international speaker, an expert with 18 years applied experience in human development and performance as a doctor and trainer of clinical hypnotherapy. He's one of less than 50 people worldwide certified as a master trainer of neuro-linguistic programming. His most recent book, Stop Chasing Perfection and Settle for Excellence, became an Amazon bestseller within 1 week of its official launch, and he regularly speaks in London sharing the importance of mind-body health. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the call Dr. Topher Morrison. How are you doing, Topher?
I am doing great, Damien. How are you?
I'm good. And I hear the weather is not so great in Florida, though.
It is hurricane season over here, so we've got thunderstorms just going crazy over my head right now. So if all of a sudden I do go blank, I apologize. I will call you right back, and I'm sure that even if I call back on the cell phone, we'll find a way. But if I do go blank, just tell them a few jokes, and I'll be back up and running in 2 minutes.
Okay, no problem at all.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm just going to kick off the questions, Topher, with a personal question. You're obviously an incredibly successful individual, and I guess my question for you is, how have you personally applied the power of your mind to reach the level of success that you enjoy today?
It's a good question, and I suppose, we probably even have to take a step back. First off, can you hear me okay, Damien?
Yeah, perfect. You're coming through loud and clear.
All right, great, because I got you on speakerphone. I figured I can kind of speak with my hands that way.
Okay, sure.
We probably have to take a step back and define what success is, because that's such a subjective word. And there's some people out there who could argue that, maybe I have achieved a certain level of success in my career, or I have in fitness, or I have in, spirituality or relationships or whatever. But, it's very subjective, And so I don't want to, I guess I'd like to just start off by letting people know that I don't think in any way that I've achieved anything great in terms of levels of success in all areas of life. I think I, like everyone else, we're all a work in progress. So if you're asking in terms of like my career, how I've done that, I'll tell you, I've really come a long way in the last 18 years. I remember when I first started out, I was so pumped up and so motivated, and I was looking for these magical techniques that would make me, motivated all the time, and I looked for these techniques that could get me to enjoy working out and eating healthy food and not watch TV and 2 inches taller and better looking and everything else. And, I searched for them all the time, and I think, over the past couple of years especially, I've really I've coined a new phrase. This one's come up just in the last couple of months. And my phrase is, I don't even know that I'm a success as much as I am a functional train wreck. You know, I think I'm a work in progress like everybody else, and I got my problems, I've got my issues, but I think I've learned to deal with a lot of them and not let them get in my way. To find a technique or process to get your problem free is probably an unrealistic promise, but I think there's a lot of skills out there that can help you to turn your problems and make them assets versus liabilities, and get clear on where your weaknesses are and delegate those things out and whatnot. So a couple things to answer that. Number one, I'd say I took a good, long, honest look at where I was at and what I was good at and what I was weak at. And all of the things that I'm not particularly strong at, I make sure I surround myself with people who are. So I've got them to rely on. If any speaker or any author or whatever I think tells you that you can do it all, be it all, and have it all, that's probably your first sign that that person's living a lie themselves. I just don't think you can. So I surround myself with, you know, great people. Like, you know, here's an example. I'm really, honestly, I got to tell you, Damon, I'm not good with numbers. I don't like them. I like words. You know, that's why I'm an author, not a mathematician, I suppose. So I guess they could probably try to find techniques that make me enjoy math or good at math, but it's a lot easier to hire people who are outstanding at math. And, you know, I've got somebody on my team here. Her name is Jasmine Velasquez. She's my accounting manager. We're promoting her to office manager. She's outstanding. She's awesome. And she takes up where I'm weak in that area, and she does a fantastic job. So worst thing is, you know, number one, associate and hang out with people who are better in areas than you are.
Yeah.
And then number two, be honest with where you're at. This is something that I've seen, I think, probably is one of the most pervasive problems in the personal development industry, is that too many people are being pumped up with false expectations out there, and they're not living honesty. They're not living a truth. You know, they're having a crappy day, and somebody says, how you doing? And they go, I'm having a great day, and they're lying to themselves. And I'm not saying that you should sit there and say you're having a crappy day either, but I think that there's somewhere in between there. There's a middle point where you can phrase it in a way which is empowering, but yet respectful and honest to yourself and to other people, to where you're not, you know, I guess, living a false life, if you will.
Terrific. I think you're doing a very important point that I think about regularly within my own business, and that is really developing teams of people around you or joint venture partners or suppliers that can actually collaborate with you in a way that creates something that's far greater than the individual, and that is literally by working out where you're strong and actually surrounding yourself with people that are strong in areas that you aren't strong in. And I think that's a really powerful distinction for people to take away from the call.
Can I share with you one of the major distinctions that I got in my career that has literally in the past, just like in the past 2 years, just catapulted my success in terms of financially. Like, this last 12 months, our revenues have increased over 500%. And I attribute it to this one technique or this one advice or tip that I got about 2 years ago. Can I share with you?
Sure. No, I'd love to hear it.
Okay, cool. Also, by the way, I should say this. You know, like you said, we did get inundated by questions. So for those of you who've got, you know, some great questions or specific questions, we've tried to chunk them in areas that, even though we may not answer it specifically, if you listen carefully, there's a good chance that, like, 10 or 15 questions will be answered at one time. So we'll do our best to get to those. Here's one I think that could answer a lot of the questions that were in the emails. I'll share with you a story. Damien, I was in this thing about 2 years ago where I got together with a guy where for 90 days we were committing ourselves to transform our lives. Literally, it had been a phone call every single day, 7 days a week, for at least 10 minutes and then 1 hour a week for one phone call. And every morning we would get together, we'd talk about what our stretch goals were for the day, and it was really cool. It was an awesome 90 days, to say the least. Mm-hmm. During that 90-day time frame, though, I was speaking with him, and the guy that I was teamed up with in this process, his name was John. He was 26 years old, and he has a net worth of over $30 million. And it's so funny because I didn't even realize he was 26 years old until about maybe, I don't know, the third or the fourth week into it. Then I was like, oh, my God, this guy's way ahead of me. So I sat down, you know, I sat on the phone with him at one time, and I said, okay, John, I go, let me ask you a question. I go, what do you think it was? What's the thing that you did that made yourself so successful? And he gave me some advice, which was just so freaking awesome. I got to share it with anybody I can nowadays. It's like a part of my seminars. It's going to be a major part of my seminar called The Mental Game of Life coming up next week, which we'll hopefully have some time to talk about as well.
Yeah.
But here's what he said. He said, I made a list of everything that I was uniquely qualified to do.
Okay.
And there were only 7 things. And he said, and I realized from that day forward that if I was doing anything other than those 7 things, I wasn't just wasting time, but I was losing money. And he said, so I hired people to do everything else other than those 7 things. And then I had a goal within 90 days to fire myself within one of those 7 things, knowing that within 90 days my career would be at such a level that I'd have new things that I'm uniquely qualified to do. And so he had this goal of always replacing one of his roles every 90 days with something new and firing himself from one of those current positions. And he says, and that's how I exploded my business at such a young age. And my response to him was this. I said, John, I go, easy for you. I take that back. First off, I said, okay, cool, let's do that. So we sat down, and you know, I think I had 6, maybe 7 or 8 things. I don't remember the exact number back then.
Okay.
By the way, it never fluctuates to more between probably 5 to 8 things with anyone, by the way.
Okay.
And so I had my list of things, and then John told me, he said, okay, Topher, he goes, so here's your things to do. And he goes, you need to do only those 7 things every single day. And if you don't do those, you're costing your company money. My answer to he goes, you have to hire other people to do everything else. Now, at the time, I didn't have any employees. I was self-employed, working out of my house. I was the president, the CEO, the CFO, the accounting, the bookkeeper, the janitor. I did it all.
So many self-employed people can relate to that.
Yeah. And I told him, I said, to say, John, you're worth $30 million. I don't have enough money to hire people to do all of those things. Here was his response. Are you ready? It slapped me so hard. It was like the best thing I ever got in terms of advice. He said, yep. And he goes, and it's attitudes like that that'll keep you from ever having $30 million. And it's attitudes like mine that get me my $30 million.
Brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant.
That is brilliant.
Look, he goes, I didn't have the money to hire people when I started either. He goes, but that's what separates the men from the boys. He says, I stepped up, I took a leap of faith, and I did what most people don't have the guts to do, which is I hired somebody when I couldn't even afford to hire them.
Brilliant.
He says, as a result of that, I became more efficient, more proficient, and I made more money faster. And he goes, yep, it was a leap of faith, it was scary as heck, but I did it, and I'm rewarded for it now. And I was like, man, that was brilliant. And literally that week, I hired myself a full-time personal assistant.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And has the process been since then, in terms of actually delegating out?
I don't think I've ever had one day where I've only done my 7 things. I find myself getting distracted a lot. But, once again, I'm a functional train wreck. I'm a work in progress. I'm doing the best I can. But now I will tell you, 2 years later, I've got a staff of 5 people. We've got a 2,000-square-foot office here in Tampa, Florida, and I'm just having a ball, man. I love coming to work every day and distracting my employees and having them make fun of me and pick on me, and it's an awesome time.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And I guess the really good thing about that is it actually gives you the opportunity to start delegating the things you don't really enjoy doing.
Exactly, yeah.
I think most people...
And if you don't do that, the only other option is find a mental technique to enjoy, which there are, or suck it up and do it anyway. Those are pretty much your options, I think.
Yeah. Excellent. Now, you mentioned that daily telephone call being quite pivotal in terms of your progress and your development. Are there any other techniques that you use on a daily basis to accelerate your performance that people might find useful on the call?
Right. Well, I like to say that I do self-hypnosis on a daily basis, but I'm not perfect. Believe me, if I were to say that, my unconscious mind would be screaming in my ear going, yeah, where were you last Thursday, buddy? So I'm not perfect at it, but I do give myself credit where credit's due, and I'm fairly regular with it. My goal is to do some form of self-hypnosis. I don't care what you call it, Damon. I could do meditation when I'm with my new age friends. I do self-hypnosis when I'm with my work colleagues. And when I'm back home on the farm with my mom and dad, I tell them I'm taking a nap. I don't care what. I'll use whatever word socially works for the group. But I take 2 times a day, I spend 20 minutes each session just getting silent and gaining perspective and just getting an internal check on reality. And the reason that I do that, and I think this might answer some of the questions that we had, in the emails there, which was so. Let me share with you what some of the questions are that I think addresses this issue. Let me just scroll to my screen here, and I'll share with you some of these questions that I think are going to address this.
Okay.
People were talking about how can you get past your limiting beliefs? There were a lot of questions about that. There were a lot of questions about focus. How do I keep focused during the day? We had a lot of people talking about action. How do I take action? How do I get from knowing into doing? We've got a lot of people here that had emails about trust. How can I trust my unconscious mind? We had people talking about fear of failure, mental blocks, self-confidence and doubt. All of those kinds of questions that people ask can be addressed in this issue. And here's what it is. It's like this. If you have any stress in your life, stress is simply the byproduct of thinking that your life is more important than it really is. I know that sounds kind of bold to say, but you can put that in any category. Do you mean stress in your relationships is the result of thinking that relationship is more important than it really is. Stress in your career is the result of thinking that career is more important than it really is. Stress in traffic is the result of thinking that that drive home or that drive to the office is more important than it really is. Whenever we get stressed, it's because we've created this lack of perspective. And what self-hypnosis does for me in its most general form is that it just helps me gain perspective. It helps me get outside of my life on a day-to-day basis and realize that, you know what, there's other things that are more important than me getting my seminar in London next week sold out. There's more important things in life than making sure my car gets washed and all that stuff. Yeah. And those things that are more important are just, you know, enjoying the now, being present and being happy. And it's something that, you know, I learn this every day. Believe me, my staff constantly reminds me of this stuff. It's so funny. You know, I didn't realize how incongruent I was until I got a staff that could call me and all my crap. Right? Like, you know, I have all these books and I write these CDs and then they start seeing that I'm not living it and they go, hey, maybe you should stop chasing perfection and settle for excellence. So, thank you very much. I appreciate the reminder.
Brilliant.
Yeah, self-hypnosis is one technique that I do on a day-to-day basis. As many times as I can. It's my goal is to do it twice a day for a total of 40 minutes. Now, the big complaint we get there is that people say, well, I don't have a spare 40 minutes. Well, get up 40 minutes early, because statistically 40 minutes of self-hypnosis is equivalent to a couple hours of sleep anyway. So
yeah.
Just set your alarm 40 minutes early, get up, and do your first 20 minutes in the morning and your second 20 minutes in the afternoon.
Brilliant. For people on the call who haven't done self-hypnosis before, can you just let them know what process you follow for that 20-minute session?
It's like this. According to the esteemed psychologist and mathematician Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, who wrote a book called Flow, he says we have about 2 million to 2.3 million bits of information going through our brain at any given second. Dr. Joe Dispenza from the movie What the Bleep Do We Know theorizes we have over 400 billion bits of information going through our brain at any given second. I don't know if it's 2 million or if it's 400 billion, but I feel comfortable in saying it's a heck of a lot. And the fact is the unconscious mind really only wants two things in life. You know what it wants, Damien? It wants this. It wants rest and nutrition. That's it. It says, you know, give me nutrition, let me rest every once in a while, and I will beat your heart, circulate your blood, help you breathe, store your memories, fight off disease. You know, it'll do everything else for you. And so hypnosis is just about honoring that rest aspect. It's about, for 20 minutes, just turning off the TV, turning off the radio, not putting any food in your mouth, not drinking anything, not smoking anything, not listening to any music, not moving around or running or walking. It's just about sitting still, closing your eyes, and just actively imagining. The most simple definition for the term hypnosis would be this. It's imagination. It's allowing yourself to just sit down for 20 minutes and say, you know, for these next 20 minutes, Damien, I'm going to imagine that I can quit smoking with no cravings or with no withdrawals. For the next 20 minutes, I'm going to sit down. I'm going to pretend that I love to exercise, and I'm going to imagine that lifestyle. For the next 20 minutes, I'm going to pretend that I'm the most confident person on the planet. For the next 20 minutes, I'm willing to set aside all my beliefs that I think are true, and I'm going to act as if I am an unlimited human being, and I can do whatever I want. And when you sit down for even 20 minutes and you just give yourself permission to believe something temporarily that you know may not be true, what happens is it gives your unconscious mind a taste of that reality. Because the unconscious mind can't distinguish the difference between something vividly imagined and reality anyway. So when you just allow yourself to just temporarily pretend, and by the way, nobody can sit on the phone right now and say, well, I can't do that. Yes, they can, because everybody knows how to read a book or watch TV. Heck, I mean, I just went and I watched Harry Potter, the new Harry Potter movie. It was awesome. 8 hours, I was totally entertained, and I imagined that this 16-year-old kid could point a stick at people and make things disappear.
Yeah.
And I got a lot of enjoyment out of that. So it's just about allowing yourself to pretend for 20 minutes that you are an unlimited human being. And when you do that on a day-to-day basis, 20 minutes a session, 40 minutes a day total, I'm telling you, it starts to affect the way you think.
Wow, that's amazing. Brilliant. Now, a fun thing that I have heard from a lot of people actually with meditation or self-hypnosis is the fact that chatter may actually appear in the mind when they first start to try it out.
Yes.
Is there like a special technique you can offer to people to actually silence that chatter down just while you are getting into that stillness, getting into that space where you're imagining an incredible new reality?
Yeah, actually, the chatter's okay. This is the one thing that's slightly different from meditation and hypnosis. People always ask me that during my seminars, by the way. They go, what's the difference between meditation and self-hypnosis? Primarily the spelling. That's about it. There's a few technique things that are different. With meditation, usually what we do is we try to silence the mind, and then the body relaxes on its own. With self-hypnosis, we really focus on relaxing the body, and then the mind kind of follows. Self-hypnosis is about listening to that chatter, but taking control over it. And having that chatter tell you what you want it to say versus just listening to it. I think one of the greatest realizations of mankind in the 21st century is going to be the discovery that that internal voice that they have going on inside their head is in fact actually their own. And that at any given time, they can change it. You know, so many times, I hear people saying, oh, I've got this voice inside my head that says I can't do anything. I'm like, well, tell it to shut up. It's your own voice. Change it from I can't do anything to I can do anything I want. And if it goes back to the old phrase, well, correct it again. You know, it's kind of like this. You know, I mean, you look at the people, whenever they're learning something new, especially like a mental technique like hypnosis or something, you know, they learn this technique and then they start to imagine themselves or trying to do some kind of imagery or whatnot, and then their old patterns get in the way.
Yeah.
And then they go, oh, crap, this stuff isn't working. Hogwash, it's totally working. It's just that you're a creature of habit. You know, it's like this. When a 7-year-old kid has a birthday and becomes 8 years old, and then next week somebody asks them how old are they, what's a good chance, what do you think they might say, what's a good possibility? They might mistake themselves and say they're how old?
8 years of age.
Yeah, they might say I'm seven.
Seven,
but a kid then's not going to sit there and go, oh, crap, I said I'm seven. I guess I have to be seven for the rest of my life. They're not going to do that. Kids have much better attitudes than adults. Now, if an adult did that, that's what we do. We go, uh-oh, crud, I'm seven again. You know, it's like this.
Yeah, yeah.
Smokers, right? They become a non-smoker. And then they screw up and they smoke a cigarette. Most people who try quitting smoking, and then they go up and they screw up one night and they smoke a cigarette, they say this. They go, oh, crap, I'm still a smoker. Once a smoker, always a smoker. Hogwash. Why don't you just go, whoop, well, that was kind of stupid. What was I thinking? And then put it down.
Mm.
You know, maybe you were just a non-smoker who smoked a cigarette once, right? Or maybe you're just a healthy person who decided to eat cheesecake once in a while. That's a lot easier way to live.
Yeah.
And so the thing is, when you start going on, if you have negative chatter and it goes back to the old way of being negative versus positive, just go, whoop, well, that was kind of an interesting comment. Well, let me see. How could I change it again today? And just like a little kid who turns 8 who accidentally says he's 7, just correct it. It's no big deal. And you do that enough and it'll fix it. Now, there's other ways you can speed that up. I mean, thankfully, through the advent of neurolinguistic programming and hypnosis, there are ways in which you can accelerate that to where it drops down. But, you know, for me to sit here and tell people that there's this magical cure, this magical technique that's going to eliminate that negative dialogue or interrupt that pattern from ever happening again, I think I'd just be doing a disservice to them, which is what I think a lot of people in the self-help world are doing for people, because they know that they're so desperate to hear a message of hope and, you know, that they'll believe anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I you know what it was for me, Damien, I'll share with you.
Yeah.
When I got into this business, I purchased a personal development franchise when I was 20, I think I was 21 years old when I bought it.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm listening to this guy's videos and selling his videos and whatnot, and he's telling me that if I do these 5 steps to success, I'm going to be wealthy beyond belief and blah, blah, blah. And I'm doing these things, and I'm dead broke. I'm living in a little studio apartment with no furniture other than a desk, a computer, and a projection screen for me to watch my videos of my boss, and I'm miserable. I'm eating every third day, and here I'm supposedly teaching people how to be successful.
Yeah.
And it was just so incongruent, right?
Yeah.
I was doing all these things, and I was trying to have this life where I was perfect and excellent, and I was lying to everybody when they'd say, how am I doing, and blah, blah, blah. And I just realized that it just wasn't authentic, and the fact is that, you know what? sometimes you do these things and it just doesn't work out. But it's not. I watched. Have you seen the new Rocky Balboa movie, Damien?
No, I haven't had the opportunity yet.
I have to say, I was so against watching this movie because I thought, give me a break. I mean, the guy's 60 years old. I'm not going to watch another Rocky movie, right?
Yeah.
I think it's my favorite Rocky movie
ever. Really?
It's that good. There's this one scene in there where he's talking to his son, and he says something like, it's not about how hard you get hit, but it's about how you get back up no matter how many times you get hit. And the fact is, life's going to smack you around, you know?
Yeah.
And if you're looking for a technique to eliminate getting smacked around, well, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know? It's going to happen. In fact, frankly, usually you get smacked down harder and more often the faster you're moving toward your goals.
Yeah, yeah.
So the people that are actually going out there and doing things, those are the ones that are running into obstacles. You know, the only people who don't have obstacles in life, Damien, are people who aren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
So if, you know, if the listeners are sitting there going, man, I feel like I'm getting beat up all the time. I'm getting discouraged because life isn't working out the way it is. Hey, you know what? I got news for you. That's just called life.
Yeah.
And we've got to learn to deal with that. And,
yeah.
NLP and hypnosis can help you to learn some ways and some strategies to help, you know, overcome the adversity, overcome the heartache and the hardship with that. But it's not going to get rid of it. You're going to still have it. It's just become more functional.
Yeah. With your business that you set up as a 23-year-old, was there a turning point for you? Like you were going along and you were struggling. Did you actually reach a point where everything started to shift for you?
Yeah, it was. I remember the day vividly. I was sitting in my apartment complex, feeling really sorry for myself. I didn't even have enough money to rent videos at Blockbuster Video, so all I literally had to do, Damon, was just sit there and watch videotapes of my boss telling me that if I did what he told me to do, I'd become a millionaire. And I was far from it. And I'm sitting there on the floor. I remember this so vividly. I'm sitting there on the floor, leaning against the wall, because I don't even have any furniture other than my chair for my desk, which I was tired of sitting on. And I'm petting my dog that I'd inherited from my grandfather, who just died about 2 months before that. And so I'm just sitting there. All of a sudden, there's a knock on my door, and I'm freaking out instantly because I'm certain that it's a loan shark, because I borrowed quite a bit of money from some unscrupulous people to be able to buy this franchise.
Okay.
They had some pretty intense interest rates, and I wasn't meeting them. And I was certain that my legs were going to get broken. And so I'm trying, like, I'm muzzling my dog, trying to stay as quiet as possible. And I sneak up the door, and I look through the peephole, and it turns out it's not a loan shark, but, in fact, it was two people, Tina and Mason Hall. Now, Tina, just to the background here, she was my high school crush. I had the biggest crush on this girl, and then she went off to college somewhere else, and we just lost contact. And then when I bought this franchise in Seattle, Washington, through serendipity alone, I ran into her husband, and we started talking, and he says, oh, yeah, my wife went to Shadow Park High School. Her name's Tina Jones. And I'm like, oh, my God, I have a crush on her, you know. So, you know, keep this in mind when I tell you this story. This is my old high school crush and her husband. And I open the door, and they got bags of groceries. And they come in, and they go, hey, we have some food left over from the food drive. The company that I'd worked for, by the way, was hosting a food drive every year right around Thanksgiving. And I, because I was in charge of the franchise, I was in charge of this food drive. And so I vividly remember sitting there driving people around, giving food to homeless people, wishing I could take one of the bags of food. I was so freaking hungry myself.
Unbelievable.
They'd help me out with that, and they saw that I was losing weight, because, I mean, I lost, like, 30 pounds, for crying out loud, over about a six-month period. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I don't have 30 pounds to lose, so I was pretty emaciated. And I opened the door, and they got bags of groceries, and they said this. They go, hey, we realized we had some food left over from the food drive. We don't know what to do with it, and since you were in charge, we thought we should give it to you. Well, I bring it in, and I go through it, and it's everything. It's all my favorite food, right? It's my soy ice cream. It's my rice milk. It's my favorite cereals. It's got dog food for my dog.
Yeah.
And I just bust down crying, you know, right in front of, I mean, this is my old high school crush, man. You don't get much lower than having your high school crush donate food to you. That's pretty low, man.
And your dog.
And what it did was, that was the turning point in my life, because up until that point, I'd been living a lie. I've been doing this bullcrap thing where, as everybody else does in the self-help business, you know, they sit there and they tell people how great their lives are and how they're doing an excellent and all this stuff, and they're not. You know, they're struggling and they're hurting. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was a turning point where I finally said, you know what, I'm just kind of sick of this whole fakeness that this business has perpetuated, and I'm just going to be real and I'm just going to be honest. And that's what I've tried to do the best I can since then.
Yeah.
And You know, it's like this. You'll never get where you want to go until you admit where you are. And
yeah.
I think most people in the self-help world are unwilling to admit where they are.
Yeah.
And that's what's keeping them from getting where they want to go.
Brilliant. Cool. That's a really powerful story, Topher. Thanks for sharing that. Now, just with the questions that we've received, and certainly in the work that I do, one of the big things that I come or hear quite often from people is the fact that fear seems to be holding them back from the success that they desire.
Yep.
And it's almost like it can have a crippling effect on them being willing to take action. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering, how can you actually start countering fear with the power of your mind, just in a way that you can deal with it and it actually doesn't hold you back from doing the things that you want to do in the world?
Yeah, okay, cool. So I'm going to probably, I may go off on tangents here, so Damien, so please, but just, you know, if you have to, just get me back on track.
Sure, no problem.
It's a big question and it's got a bit even bigger answer.
Mm-hmm.
And my answer is probably a little bit controversial. It's a little bit different than what most self-help people believe out there. So a couple things. First off, I don't believe in a fear of success.
Okay.
I don't think people actually fear success. I think they fear failing at success. It's just another fear of failure at a different level. So they're afraid of failing at succeeding. It doesn't matter, by the way, and even if people don't agree with that definition, fear is fear, whether it be a fear of spiders or a fear of failure or whatever it is. Specifically
mm-hmm.
in the fear of failure or the fear of failing at success or whatever it is, much of that fear, in my opinion, is derived from two elements. One element is ego.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get rid of your fear of success or your fear of failure, have your high school crush donate food to you and realize how much further down to go, and all of a sudden, you know, worst-case scenarios don't seem that bad.
Yeah.
The second element is this, and this one's a little bit different than what some self-help schools teach. A lot of people focus on, there was a theory developed by the Epicureans in 412 AD, and their theory was that human beings do anything to avoid pain and everything to gain pleasure. And their theory was that they would do more to avoid pain than they would to gain pleasure. And while I'm not disagreeing with that, and I'm not saying that that's not true, I don't think it's an effective form of motivation. I think when you use fear or moving away from what you don't want as a motivator, what happens is then those fears inherently creep up on you. So it's like this. If we've got a fear of failing at success, or if we have a fear of failing in life, that fear is the one thing that could keep us from actually achieving that. You've heard the phrase, what you resist persists,
mm-hmm.
right? Did I lose you?
No, I'm okay, still with you. Yeah, right. Definitely, yeah.
So you've heard the phrase, what you resist persists, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So if what we resist persists, then why would we try to associate pain to not getting what we want? You know, a lot of self-help people out there, they sit there and say, what you need to do is you need to associate so much pain to being a lazy bum and so much pleasure to being a success that your mind moves you in the direction of being a success. My thinking is why? Why do we have to associate pain to being a bum? Why can't we just focus on the aspects of success? But if we're always using pain as a motivational tool, guess what? Fear is going to be lurking right around the corner. And so for me, what I do is my approach is this. If what we resist persists, then we should never resist the worst-case scenario. This is a huge element, by the way, that we're going to be addressing at my seminar next weekend in London,
yeah.
Which is this aspect of, you know, why do we fight the worst-case scenario? Why do we resist the worst-case scenario? The only reason that we could resist or fight the worst-case scenario is because we're ignorant to assume that we know what God's plans are for us. And this is not a religious call. I'm not trying to get spiritual or, you know, sanctimonious or whatever on people. But I do believe there's a higher power out there. Call it God, call it Buddha, call it Shiva, call it Allah, call it your unconscious mind, call it your internal gut. Call it the universe, mother, father, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. I think there's something out there driving us. And I think that there's intention and a order to that. And for us to think that the worst case scenario is somehow not what maybe we're destined to have, well, it seems like that's coming from a very arrogant place.
Mm.
So here's what I did one time. I sat down. This was right after, by the way, Tina Hall donated her food to me. I sat down and I thought, okay, this moving away from pain thing is not working for me. So I thought, what if I just embraced it? And by the way, the concept of this came out of a book called You Can Have It All by Arnold Patton. I couldn't quote you the page or the chapter. He probably doesn't even say it word for word, but it's what triggered me and spawned me in this direction. And it's like this. What I did is I sat down one day, and instead of linking up so much pain to the worst-case scenario, what I did is I learned to accept the worst-case scenario. So I sat down and I said, what's the worst possible thing that could happen in my life? And I imagined that. And then I imagined how I can make it even worse, and even worse, and even worse, and even worse. But I did it from a place of total acceptance. I did it from a place of saying, okay, but let's just say that my ultimate destiny is to become this loser who has to move back home with his mom and dad when he's 40 years old, and he doesn't ever exercise or work out, and he doesn't have a girlfriend, and he just plays video games 12 hours a day, and he eats junk food. Mm-hmm. And if that's my destiny, guess what? I got news for you. If that's who I'm supposed to be and that's what I'm destined to turn out as, once I'm dead, I'm not going to care anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took the attitude of life from, okay, well, maybe there's something greater this whole aspect of life, and maybe if I just get outside of these markers called birth and death, maybe I'll realize that none of those things are going to be really important in the beginning. I mean, do you really think that the ultimate, whatever you want to call it, the ultimate higher power in this universe is going to care whether or not we were a multimillionaire or whether we were a bum on the streets?
Yeah.
I don't think he or she will. And I don't think we will once we're dead. And I know this to be true, by the way, because there's only three possible options that could happen after we die. Option number one, we are an enlightened human being. And if we're an enlightened human being, I can promise you we're not going to care that we had a life where we had bills, or that our spouse left the toilet seat up at night, or that our spouse spent 65 pounds putting highlights in her already beautiful hair. We're not going to care about those things that just bug us in life.
Mm.
Because we're going to realize that there's something far greater out there than the little thing called Earth. That's option number one. Option number two is we're worm food. You know, we don't. This whole spiritual aspect is a bunch of bunk, and it's just a great marketing ploy to get us to buy a lot of books and crystals. Well, that's possible. So if that's the case, well, we're still not going to care at the end of our lives what kind of a life we had.
Yeah.
And then the third option, of course, if you believe in it, is you'll be in hell. And if that's the case, well, you're going to have a lot bigger problems to deal with than when you're down there than what kind of a life you had up here. So either way, you still won't care. But I like to think it's the enlightened being approach. And I think that once we get to the end of our lives, we're going to realize that, well, what happened here was really just entertainment, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just along for the ride now. And by doing that, now here's what happens. Now I don't worry about the worst-case scenario.
Yeah.
Because if the worst-case scenario does happen, yeah, maybe in the context of right then and there, it may not be that pleasurable, and it certainly wouldn't be as sexy and as cool as the guy who owns the Lamborghini and has the million-dollar home. But at the long run, at the end of the day, we're all going to finish in the same spot. And
yeah.
If that's my destiny, that's my destiny. And now that I'm okay coming from that place, here's what happens. All the worst-case scenarios now, they don't plague me. I don't fear them. They're not a constant part of my attitude or my beliefs.
Yeah.
Supposedly, by the way, we're still a work in progress. I still get that stuff coming up. I mean, you could talk to my staff, and just like 2 days ago, I'm sitting there going, "We got to get our JVs to promote the seminar. We're going to sell it out." And at the end of the day, who cares, right? You know,
yeah.
Even if there's three people in the audience, if we connect with those three people, we have a great time. Well, maybe that's the purpose too.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of where I come from. My whole thing is, you know what? Stop resisting the worst-case scenario and learn to accept it. Now, that's how I use my techniques in NLP nowadays, is not how I can motivate myself to get what I want, but it's that how can I change the rules to where all of a sudden now I'm not plagued by those things, I'm not burdened by them. And
yeah.
I got to tell you something, Damien, when you get to that level where you're not burdened by them anymore, it opens up the energetic channels to have whatever the hell you want.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I got to tell you, ever since I stopped resisting, I've been able to create a lot more in my life.
Yeah. I think, like, you just pulled up some very, very important distinctions, and I think just the acceptance of fear and the worst case scenario, and just being present to that experience and emotion, certainly takes away the charge or the negative emotions and thoughts that are surrounding that whole experience. And I guess, like, for most people, the worst case scenario very rarely ever actually arises in real life. So we're fearing things that never actually happen.
What I found is that the people who don't resist the worst-case scenario, that have learned to accept it, they never manifest it. But what I have noticed is I've noticed that people, Like, I've known people who have done these pain-pleasure exercises where they imagine the worst-case scenario, they wake up and associate massive levels of pain to it, and they actually manifest it in their life. That's interesting.
Wow.
Right? No, because they're putting so much energy there, and attention goes, and energy goes where attention goes where energy flows.
Yeah.
So it's all there. So I just don't want to give it any energy now.
Brilliant. Cool. That's a really important distinction.
Yeah.
Okay, now, another thing that people were questioning about prior to the seminar was the whole idea of actually transforming thoughts into action. And quite a lot, often people will go to seminars, they'll get all pumped up, and they'll literally, inside of them, they'll want to take that action or that step forward, but then they, when it actually comes down to taking that action, they feel blocked or they just feel that they can't make that movement forward. Now, I was just wondering what techniques you might have to actually propel people forward in terms of actually acting on the things that they want to do in the world.
Yeah, I think this one's a fairly simple one to attack, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I think, actually, by the way, I don't really, at this point in time, I think there are people who procrastinate. I'm not saying that that's not a problem for most people. But what I'm saying is, but I do believe that most people have confused procrastination with perfectionism.
Okay.
So here's what happened. This was the whole impetus behind the book, Stop Chasing Perfection and Settle for Excellence. So I guess I'll share with you a little bit out of the textbook for that.
Okay.
My belief is this. Most people in our culture nowadays are going for the perfect life. You know, in fact, if you read your questions, right, the people listening in on this phone call, I'd have to say, Damien, would you agree maybe 30 to 40% of the questions were all about how to obtain the perfect life?
They'd all definitely be along that theme, yeah.
Yeah. And so, but you know, we all have different definitions of what perfection is, of course. For some people, the perfect life is having the million-dollar mansion. For some people, the perfect life is having the cabin in the woods. Whatever it is fine. But for most part, we've allowed society, conditioned us, to believe that these perfect bodies, perfect incomes, perfect lifestyles, perfect everything is the goal to go for.
Mm.
And what happens is this. For example, I'll make it real simple. Cleaning the desk. There's something that just about everybody has to do from time to time, right? Well, how many times have you procrastinated cleaning up your desk? I know I've done it before. And the reason that I procrastinate cleaning up my desk is this. It's not the perfect time to clean it. Because I know that if I it's a big thing, I've got to tackle it, and I'm not going to, like, right now isn't the perfect time to clean the desk. Because I'm going to need at least 2 hours for that.
Huh.
So I put it off. Now, I'm not procrastinating because I'm lazy. I'm procrastinating because I'm ambitious. I've got too high of standards. I want the perfect time to do it. You know, everybody listening to this phone call, I promise you, has that one special phone call that they need to make. They got that one person they need to call, but they haven't called them. You know why? Because it's not the perfect time to do it.
Uh-huh.
They're too busy. It's too late. It's too early.
Yeah.
They're not focused. They haven't prepared their speech. They don't know what to say. They feel weird. So all of these things get in the way because it's not the perfect condition necessary in order for them to make the phone call.
Uh-huh.
So they don't make the phone call. Is it because they don't love the person? No, not at all. It's because it's not the perfect time to do it. So what happens is a lot of people don't, in my opinion, they don't get into action because they want it. They want to make sure, they want to guarantee that once they start that action, they're going to do it perfectly. And that standard for perfection is, in fact, keeping them from actually going for anything anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So this is my philosophy of, you know, stop chasing perfection and settle for excellence. I realize that the time to clean my desk right now is not perfect, but it is an excellent time because I can just take at least one paper and file it away.
Mm.
I realize that now may not be the perfect time to make that phone call, but it is the most excellent time to make the phone call because I can at least leave a message if I have to.
Yeah.
You know, I might be able to say, hey, you know what? I just wanted to call and let you know I'm sorry I haven't called, and I don't even have time to talk right now. But you know what? I've been using that excuse for the past 3 months, and it's not getting me anywhere. So I just wanted to call and say I'm thinking about you, I care about you, and I feel badly that I haven't spoken with you with any good quality time. But I want you to know right now is not that time either, but I'm thinking about you. What kind of a – that would make my head spin if my friend ever called me up and said that. And you know what? I'd be like, no problem. You know what? I feel bad. I haven't called you for the same reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think what happens is the easiest way for people to get into action, in my opinion, is to lower their standards. How's this for a motivational speaker, right? Huh? You lower your standards in life. Because if you lower your standards and you settle for something less than perfection, maybe something like excellence, but don't lower it so to the level of mediocrity. I think that's a lot of people's problems in life too. You know, our culture has made mediocrity the norm, and I don't think that's the solution either. But settle for excellence. Yep.
Brilliant.
And then by doing that, you realize that you're not going to get the perfect. You know, maybe you're not going to have the perfect workout. How many times have you? When I say you, I don't mean you, Damien. I'm talking to everybody on the phone here.
Yeah.
You know, how many times have you used? Well, I don't have a full 30 minutes to work out, so I'm not going to work out right now. It's the excuse for not working out.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in the world of exercise, I got to tell you, a little of something is better than a lot of nothing. How many of you have used the excuse, well, I don't have a lot of money, and it's not going to do any good to save 10 pounds or $10 or 10 euros, so what's the point? Well, I got news for you. In the world of savings, a little of something is better than a lot of nothing.
Hmm.
Go down and deposit $1 if you have to. How many of you on the phone right now have used the excuse that, you know, now's not the perfect night to take out your spouse for a special evening as the excuse for not doing it? You know what? It may not be perfect, but go out and take them out anyway.
Yeah.
You know, find an excellent. Make it excellent. And I think if most people just realize that they don't have to have the right time, like everything doesn't have to fall in place in order for us to take action. A little of something is better than a lot of nothing, and that's my motto. And you know what? When I follow it, I do pretty dang good.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do slip back into the old pattern sometimes, and I find myself putting things off because I'm looking for the perfect time to do it. But
yeah, yeah.
By and large, that's my motto.
Brilliant. That actually reminds me of a story that I read about a guy who was just talking about his deceased wife. And they, I think together between them, bought this very sexy lingerie, and they were actually saving it for the perfect occasion. And his wife actually died suddenly, and she never actually got to wear the lingerie. And this whole email was about never actually wait for that perfect moment, just every moment is perfect, and just embrace the moment and just go for it. So I wholeheartedly echo those comments, Topher. Probably got time for one more question on my list, and it was a question that was very popular with people. It's this whole process of financial mastery, and I guess, like, you've had a lot of experience in the arena of finance and mental beliefs around finance, and in fact you had a very successful seminar running here in London called The Mental Game of Money.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the question that I was keen to explore, and this is certainly relevant for lots of self-employed and entrepreneurial people, when they notice the flow of money changing, so it may be really high at one moment in time and then, bang, it'll fall down low. And quite often it can be an emotional cycle. And I was just wondering if you could share some special insights into why that may be the case.
There's a couple things, actually. Specifically, the ups and downs that people... First off, everything ebbs and flows in life. And once again, you know... It's something that's unfortunate because there's a lot of people in the self-help world that take advantage of people hoping for a dream and hoping for this miracle. So they tell them that, you know, this will eliminate the downs. Nothing's going to eliminate the downs, okay? There's ebb and flow in life. It's natural. It's nature. It's just how it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have to be very high. They don't have to be very low. You can kind of even those things out. If you're experiencing a lot of highs and dramatic lows, in other words, you make a lot of money and then you're broke, and then you make a lot of money and then you're broke, or you lose the weight and then you gain it, you lose the weight and then you gain it, or you're happy and then you're depressed, or you're happy and then you're depressed, whatever it is. The reason for that, there's actually one specific reason for that, and I've already addressed it slightly, but I haven't linked it up to this, so this is a good question. The reason for that is because they're using pain as a motivator instead of pleasure as a motivator.
Okay.
Let me give you an example of this. We use financial terms since that's the question you asked about, Damien. It's like this. For somebody who makes a lot of money and loses it, those are the people who are making money not because they want to be rich, but they're making money because they don't want to be broke. And those are two very different reasons for why you'd want to make money.
Mm.
You know, I look at somebody like a Donald Trump, for example. Now, there's a guy who makes money because he doesn't want to be broke. And as a result, Donald Trump makes and loses millions. Now, the only reason that we don't think it's a problem for him is because his definition of what broke is probably higher than all of our cumulative definitions of what rich is. So we look at him and go, oh, he's amazing. But he probably is in a lot of pain half the time because he loses such money.
Yeah.
He makes it back, but he loses it all the time. Compare him to a guy like Richard Branson, who very rarely loses. I mean, he's made a couple bad calls. Like, I think Virgin Cola is probably a pretty stupid thing for him to do. I don't think it's really taken off very well.
Yeah.
But by and large, you know, Richard Branson just keeps making more and more and more money. Same thing with Bill Gates. He makes more and more and more money.
Mm.
These people are making money because they want to be rich. They don't care about being broke.
Uh-huh.
They don't focus on it. So what happens is, here's the thing. So, and we're actually going to have somebody come up on stage, by the way, at the Metal Game of Life next weekend and do this with them as an exercise. But,
okay.
So, for example, I'll ask somebody who's having the ups and downs, I'll say, hey, how much money do you have to make in order to be broke? That's kind of an odd question, right?
Mm.
Nobody could have really thought about, how much money do I need to make this month in order for me to be broke? But the unconscious minds are thinking of it. So let's say, for example, you've got 5,000 pounds or dollars or euros worth of expenses in life. Well, that means you can make $5,000, and at the end of the month, you're broke.
Mm-hmm.
So what most people do is if they're going up and down, they don't want to be broke. What happens is they get really motivated when they're broke. So they go, man, I don't want to be broke. And they start making their calls. They start doing their follow-ups. They start doing what they need to do, and they start making money. And all of a sudden, they're going, hey, this is working. It's working really well.
Mm.
And they start making money, and they make enough money to where now they're in a category called not broke. Now, that's probably not 5,000 and 1 pounds, but let's say maybe it's 6,000 or 7,000 pounds or dollars or euros a month. Then they get into that zone, that safety zone, and they go, oh, phew, now I'm not broke. Well, Damien, if your whole motivation to make money is to not be broke, and now you're not broke, where goes your motivation?
Just goes out the door.
Goes out the door. The very thing that was motivating you is now gone because now you're not broke.
Mm.
Whereas you look at it like, I want to be rich. I want to be wealthy. I want to be opulent. I want to be whatever it is, right? Those people, they'll go way past 5,000 pounds or dollars or euros a month. They'll just keep making more and more money. Because let's say the standard for them for wealthy is 10,000 pounds a month or 20,000 pounds a month or whatever, right?
Mm.
Well, they get all the way up to there. Now, if your whole motivation to be wealthy is to be wealthy, then when you're wealthy, where's your motivation? Well, it stays there. In fact, what it does is it probably converts to something like, I want to stay wealthy.
Yeah.
So instead of, I don't want to be broke, because once you're no longer broke, your motivation's gone. If you want to be wealthy, well, then when you're there, you'll want to stay there. But the cool thing about that is this. Most people's definition or standard for wealthy will change after about 3 months of consistency.
Yeah.
So I don't care how much money you make. If you've made it for 3 months in a row, within the third month, you're all going to all of a sudden think, that's not wealthy anymore.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You'll raise up. So let's say your standard for wealthy is 10,000 pounds a month today. Well, if you make 10,000 pounds a month for 3 months in a row, I promise you, you won't be thinking 10,000 pounds a month is wealthy anymore. You'll probably think it's like 15 or maybe 20.
Mm-hmm.
So people that typically focus on what they want usually have an upward scale that always goes up. People that are doing things in life because they don't want to experience the pain of them, they only work up until they no longer are in pain, and then they self-sabotage themselves to go back into pain, and then they get their motivation. Because the unconscious mind, by the way, loves motivation. And if all of a sudden it's lost it, it's going to go, God, when was I most motivated? I remember I was most motivated when I was broke or when I was fat or when I was alone or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And it'll sabotage your success, drag you right back down into the depth,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're back at square one.
Yeah, that reminds me of a very interesting story of Willie Nelson. He was being interviewed by a journalist one time, and the journalist actually asked Willie, she said to him, look, I don't mean to be rude, Willie, but how come your new music isn't anywhere as good as your old music? And Willie Nelson's response was, well, that's simple. Like, I'm no longer tired, hungry, and broke. So, which really sort of reinforces exactly what you just said, shared there.
And you know what's funny? I don't know when he did that interview, but it was funny, isn't it? Now Willie Nelson is tired, hungry, and broke again.
So maybe he's just, his best music's right in front of him.
Yep, he'll probably come out with another hit.
Soon. Brilliant. Well, Topher, that's thank you so much for all the incredible experience and stories and knowledge that you've shared on the call today. Like, I've certainly taken a tremendous amount away and certainly made some very key distinctions. I think there's a lot of subtlety in there as well that people will really help them to lift their game and take their life to the next level. Now,
this hour's gone really fast.
It's gone fast, yeah. Now, I know there are going to be a lot of people on this call that have really resonated with your message, resonated with your teachings, and certainly want to take their experience of your work forward. I was just wondering if you could take a couple of moments just to share how people can actually get to know your work a bit better and actually experience more of it.
Certainly. We're actually, if for those of you who are living in London, in the London area, or anywhere in Europe, I mean, it's not that hard to get over to London. I've got a seminar coming up next weekend. It's my latest program. It's called The Mental Game of Life. And as usual, whenever I come up with a brand new program, I give it away just to create a buzz in the marketplace. So it's we're giving it away for free. You can go to a website called it's www.mentalgameoflife. Those four words, mentalgameoflife.com. And you can register. And the only catch is that we want you to fill out a marketing survey. And the reason we want to do that is because we want to get to know our customers more. We want to know what makes you tick. We want to know what kind of products you like so we can create products based upon what you feel is important. So it takes about 15, 20 minutes to fill out the marketing survey. If you give me 15 minutes of your time, I'll give you 2 full days from 9 in the morning till 7 at night that will blow you away. If you've liked what you've heard here, I can promise you, you will love The Mental Game of Life. If you have hated what you've heard here, please don't come. You will not like the seminar, I can tell you that right now. But if the message has resonated with you, I can promise you this, you're going to love it. It's not one of those weekend seminars where, you know, we just sell you crap all weekend long and plug, plug, plug. We give you massive value. You talk to anybody who went to my Mental Game of Money seminar, which is similar to this one. They'll tell you that I gave so much value, and I spoke about my seminars all of maybe 15 minutes on Sunday, and I'm going to do the same thing on this one. I think that's fair. But it's called mentalgameoflife.com. Now, for those of you who don't live in Europe and you'd like to get exposed to that, we are videotaping it, and we'll make sure we tell you about the DVDs when they're done. But you can also go to my basic website and just buy some of the products. You know, I got a great book called Settle for Excellence that people have been loving, and I'm real proud of it. It's my best work of art. And that's tophermorrison.com, TopherMorrison, tophermorrison.com. I'd imagine Damien will probably send you guys a link anyway. The teleconference, just with the, you know, sources and referrals or whatever it is, resources. But you can go check me out there. And I would so love to have every one of you guys show up at the Mental Game of Life next weekend. You know, you've probably had many teleseminars, you've been on them before, where they're nothing but sales pitches the whole time. And it'll give you any content. Hopefully we've proven to yourself over this last hour that we like to give massive content and massive value, and hopefully you've gotten that out of this today.
Cool, brilliant. I think that's an excellent opportunity for people. I'm just going to endorse the seminar myself, and just to let everyone know that I will be personally attending the seminar with my notepad and really looking to make some powerful distinctions for myself, so I really do endorse that.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate that. It means a lot, by the way.
No problem. Okay, now we're probably going to just open up the call now to some questions before we close. So what I'm going to ask people on the call to do, if you have a question that you want to ask Topher, if you can press 6 to unmute your line and 6 to remute yourself, just so we have a nice, clean, crisp recording. I'm just going to change it on to Q&A mode. So 1 second.
Conversation mode is on. Everyone can now be heard. Q&A mode is on. Participants may now unmute themselves.
Okay, so if you have a question for Topher, if you could just press 6 to unmute your line, and once you've asked your question, if you could just press 6 again to mute your line again. Who's going to ask the first question?
Go ahead, I heard somebody hit 6.
Hey.
Hello?
Hi. Who are we?
Hi. Yeah, it's Robin here.
Hi, Robin, how are you doing?
No, I'm good. Topher, loving the seminar. I think you're inspirational, and thank you very much.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
I want to find out more about it and everything. I need to clarify and confirm and act according on that. But I had a question when I was filling out the seminar thing, which was one key question: what do I want from this? And that was pretty much to figure out how I can use this type of technique or tools or resources to figure out what it is that I really want to do with my life in terms of maybe profession, because that's been my burning question since I can remember. And from that point of view, how will I know what will make me happy in terms of what you obviously, based on what you do, it's something that's quite transparent. You love it, and that's your motivation, that's your drive. But I really want to figure out how I can use these tools to figure out what it is that I really want to do with my life, because I'm very, you know, obviously that's my key question, really.
All right, cool. You know what? I remember your name is Robin, is that right?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, I remember your question, buddy. I wanted to address this one, so I'm kind of glad you piped up and said something.
Oh, fantastic.
So, go ahead, hit 6 to mute it again, so we have
no problem
here, and I'll address that. There's a two part answer to this question. Number one is this, and we'll take kind of a psychological approach, and we'll take a metaphysical approach. Number one, psychological approach through hypnosis. Here's the thing. If right now you don't have a clear message from your soul, from your heart, whatever you want to call that, I call it your unconscious, but you can call it whatever you want. If you don't have a clear message on what you want to do in your life, it's not that the message isn't there. It's just that you've trained yourself to not pay attention to it. See, what most people do in life is they've been trained to ignore their unconscious mind. You know, how many times have we been at a restaurant and the waiter asked us if we'd like dessert? And our gut instinct said, no, don't eat the dessert. It's not good for you. It's a bunch of crap. But you ignored that, and you said, yep, I'll take a bowl of ice cream. I'll take a cup of pie or a biscuit or something like that. You know, how many times have we been driving down the road to pull into fast food, and our heart and our soul and our gut's telling us this food is just crap. Don't eat it. But we ignore it, don't we? We just go, yeah, no, but I'm so hungry. Boom, and we go in and we eat it. Or how many times have we drawn by and we're tired, so we see a Starbucks, and we know that we should just go take a nap or do some form of meditation. We should eat healthier or something, but we just drink the caffeine anyway. You know, what happens is we've conditioned ourselves to ignore us. We've conditioned ourselves to just kind of shut that part of ourselves up, the unconscious mind, and learn to ignore it. Then, when we come to that final realization, we're like, okay, you know what, I think I want to find out what I want to do in my life. And we turn and we ask our unconscious mind, hey, buddy, what should I be doing? The unconscious mind responds back with this. That's called the silent treatment, right? And they're going, screw you, buddy. Why should I tell you what we ultimately want to do? I keep telling you what's ultimately good for you anyway, and you keep ignoring me. And I think that's, and by the way, I'm not Robin, I'm not saying that's what's going on with you. I'm just saying that this is, by and large, what happens with a lot of people is that when they finally turn to their unconscious mind, their soul, their heart, their gut, and they ask it, what in my heart of hearts do I want to do in my life? By the time they finally turn to their unconscious mind to ask it a question, they've learned to ignore it for so many years it doesn't want to play anymore. So the next natural question is, what do you do? Well, learn to, for me, you know, self-hypnosis is the first thing. You'll learn to go out and get a book on it. If you don't want to go to my program, that's cool. There's loads of them out there that teach you how to do it. But start communicating with your unconscious mind. Start having a question. And the first conversation you might want to have with your unconscious mind is one of an apology. And say, hey, buddy, I am sorry I've been ignoring you. I can't promise that I'm not going to do it again. I probably will because I'm filled with mistakes. But, you know, but buddy, I'm going to do my best to start listening to you. And by God, then the next time your gut tells you, don't eat that cheesecake, don't eat that Big Mac, don't eat that whatever it is, you know, do it. You know, listen to the unconscious mind and don't eat it. Don't, you know, pass up on it. Say, okay, I'm going to go get myself a smoothie instead or something like that. You know, it's ironic that one of the first things your unconscious mind is going to want to move you toward is better levels of health in your life, even if you don't like health. And that's because it needs it. That's its highest value, whether regardless of yours. So that's part one to your question. Part two to your question is this, and this is trite, but it works real well. So, Robin, specifically to you, if you were diagnosed with a deadly disease today and they told you that you only had a month to live, what would you be doing during that month? And I promise you it wouldn't be sitting around asking yourself what you want to do for the rest of your month. Whatever comes to mind, that's what you probably should be doing, you know, because that's what your heart's telling you. I got to tell you right now, buddy, if I had 1 month to live, I couldn't imagine a better way to go out on top than to do a seminar with 1,500 people in the audience and just inspiring hearts. And I mean, I'm doing what I love. You know, I just keep on doing what I'm doing. Yeah, if I wouldn't spend as many days in the office, but I definitely want to get up on stage. There's no doubt about it. So ask yourself, you know, if you're coming to the end of your life, what would you be doing that last month? And chances are there's your direction. It may not be your literal answer, but there's a direction there somewhere. So maybe if you say, I think I'd be going camping. Okay, well, maybe you shouldn't be a camper for the rest of your life, but what is it that camping gives you? What's the joy that gives you that? And then find something that provides for you that expression of joy.
Great. Thanks very much for the question, Robin. So we've got time for two questions. So if you do have a question, you just press 6 to unmute your line to ask Topher your question. And it could be about anything at all in terms
Hi,
of the...
Okay. Heather here.
Hi, Heather. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. I'm doing good. And Topher, thank you so much for that Mental Game of Money seminar. I thought it was absolutely awesome. I was there, and I've been working on some of those techniques. You reminded me that I've slipped up on the meditation, which is something that I had kind of begun to introduce into my life, so I know that I need to get back to that. And I suspect that that might be part of the answer to the question that I'm going to ask you. There's two things that you mentioned, actually. One was about turning weaknesses into assets.
Yes.
And the other was about the distinction that you learnt from the guy that you were doing the 90-day work with. The seven things that you... How do we discover the seven things, or whatever, however many, five, eight, whatever, things that we're uniquely qualified to do? I mean, I started sort of thinking about that and thinking, ooh, what am I uniquely qualified to do?
Yeah. Okay, great question, Heather. Thank you very much. If you could hit 6 to remute yourself, that'd be fine.
Okay.
We have a clean recording. Self-hypnosis isn't the answer for this one. Thank God, because I don't want to sound like Johnny One Knows, so this is good. So this is a real easy process. All you have to do is sit down and just start making a list of everything that you have to do in your life, in your career, for example. I mean, you know, that's what I do. So, you know, I sat down and I made a list of everything that needed to get done in my job, in my career. And I don't remember how many I came up with, but if I'm not mistaken, I had something like 198, 196 different things that had to get done every single day, or at least every other day, or at least, you know, on a consistent basis. And then what I did is after I made the entire list, I just asked myself, could somebody else do that one? And if it was a yes, I crossed it off. Could somebody do that? Yes, crossed it off. And then once I had the things left that, you know, didn't cross off, those were my unique things. So for me, and I don't remember exactly what all of them were, but here were some of them I remember specifically back then. Now I've got a whole new list. But speak on stage. That's something I'm uniquely qualified to do. Nobody else on my staff can do that for me. Write my own books. I'm uniquely qualified to do that. Make my own audio recordings. I'm uniquely qualified to do that. Design my own PowerPoint slides, which you would think maybe I could hire somebody to do that, but my PowerPoint slides are so advanced that I want to do them myself. So, but that's one that I'm eventually going to fire myself on. Another one was, back then, was do my own video and audio editing, which even though I'm not uniquely qualified to do that, I haven't found somebody who has the same standards of quality, so I want to continue to own that. And now we're getting out of that. Well, that's the latest thing that I fired myself from, so I'm not doing that much anymore. I still do some of the simpler ones, but you know, we're trying to farm that out as much as possible. Let's see, what were some of the other ones? Sell my seminar was one of the other ones because, you know, as a self-employed person, I couldn't really hire somebody to sell people my seminars because nobody knew them as good as I did. And that's one that I'm still uniquely qualified to do in my company. And now finally Jasmine Velasquez is getting really good at that, so she's been able to kind of take over on that. And now we're getting to where we're going to, you know, the next person we're bringing on staff is actually a salesperson, so I can train them on how to sell people my seminars so I can step out of that role now. So. That's what I did. I just made a big list and just start crossing it off if I couldn't do it. And I will tell you, by the way, please, Heather, don't think that I only did those 6 or 7 things. There were like another 50 of them there that I still wasted my time doing. Hell, I'm still answering my emails, and I am not uniquely qualified to answer my emails. I should have somebody else doing that. And then on the 5 questions at the most that they can't answer, then those are the emails I should be answering. So once again, I'm a work in progress. I don't mean to think that I got all the answers and I'm living them.
Cool. Thank you, Heather, for the question. Great question. And we've got time for time for one more question. If you feel the urge, certainly press 6 to unmute your line to ask away.
Would you be greedy? But I did actually ask also about the element of turning weaknesses into...
Oh, gosh, yeah, sorry.
That's fine. Since nobody else knew the question.
That's all right. What was the specific question in that area, Heather?
Yeah, Topher, you talked about when you talked about being a work in progress, and you talked about dealing with problems and not allowing them to get in your way, and turning your weaknesses into to assets.
Yeah.
it was sort of linked around surrounding yourself with people, but I wondered if you could talk a little bit about the process of not allowing problems and weaknesses and so on to get in your way, to understand and understanding yourself and actually being stronger, I suppose, really, because of that.
Sure. Okay, well, it kind of goes back to that whole actual aspect of perfectionism. You know, what I did, for example, is I just realized that, so this is a two-parter as well. Part one was I realized that, I didn't have to do things perfectly, so I could just settle for making a couple mistakes and just go for it, and that helped out a lot. You'd be surprised how many of your quote-unquote weaknesses really aren't weaknesses at all. They just aren't things that you like to do. And that certainly isn't for me. If I have to, I always tell people that I have no attention for detail. I just like the big picture, and I don't need to know what the details are. But the fact is, I actually have a strong attention to detail, especially when it relates to, my seminars and things like that. So, for me to say that I'm weak with details is really kind of an excuse of mine to say, well, I'm not perfect at it, so I just don't want to do it. So, number one, just lower your standards and realize that you can be excellent at it, and just do with what you can. Second thing is just sometimes, and this is so anti-motivational speaker, but it's the truth. You know, sometimes just suck it up and do it anyway. We have a phrase in America called cowboy up, and what that means is just, pull up your bootstraps and do it anyway. And there's part of that as well. So overcoming the perfectionism is one. And then the second thing that I did mention was don't be afraid to hire people to do those things as well. You know, if I wanted to, I could sit down, I could do the math, I could do the numbers, but the fact is I don't get much joy out of it either, so I've hired somebody to do that. And that's where it really just takes a leap of faith, Heather, and sometimes you got to say, you know what, I'm going to outsource this. I'm going to free it up. And I'm telling you, if you can outsource all of the things that you don't enjoy in life, there's only room for more joy. And when you open up that joy, it just opens up the floodgates of attraction. There's so much out there with the laws of attraction and whatnot, and what people don't realize is that they're never going to be able to manifest or attract what they want in their life if they're vibrating at a frequency which creates pain. But once they're vibrating at a frequency which creates energy and happiness and joy and those types of things, man, the doors open up and they just flow. It's real nice. So hire it out. Outsource. Outsource your misery is what the phrase that I like to use.
Brilliant. I think that's all we have time for, Topher. And I just want to take this opportunity to thank you so very much for the incredible value that you've offered this evening. It really has been an inspiring call. And just for people who may not have got those details earlier on, if you do want to actually find out more about Topher, Topher is running a workshop on the 28th and 29th in London. And the actual domain name for that workshop is mentalgameoflife.com. That's mentalgameoflife.com. It is a free seminar, again, tribute to Topher's philosophy on delivering value to people and changing people's lives. So I do wholeheartedly recommend you do check that out if the message this evening has resonated with you. And also, if you wanted to find out more about Topher personally, if you want to check out TopherMorrison.com. That's T-O-P-H-E-R Morrison, MORRISON.com. And also,
can I say one real quick thing?
Sure.
I got an email today from a guy who filled out our survey to sign up for the seminar, and he emailed me back really pissed off because the seminar is actually in Croydon, and I'm a stupid American. Hey, I don't know what I'm doing. So we say London, but the actual place is Croydon. I don't want to mislead anybody.
Okay.
Sneaky or something like that. But I was told by people in London that it's okay to say London, England, because if it's within 30 minutes, we could just call it London anyway. So it is in Croydon, which I understand is about a 12 to 14-minute train ride from Victoria, and I promise you it'll be well, well worth the trip out there.
Brilliant. I'm an Australian. I'm also geographically challenged in the UK as well, so I can certainly relate to that. And also for people who have enjoyed the call this evening, I will be making it available free of charge on a website called peopleyoushouldmeet.com. So if you do want to re-listen to this recording at any stage or download it for your iPod, I'd certainly recommend you do that. Tomorrow it should be on there early morning, so that's peopleyoushouldmeet.com. Brilliant. So that's it for me, Topher. I'm just going to open up the lines and give everyone the opportunity to thank you again for your incredible energy and wisdom that you've shared this evening. So I'm just going to swap the line now.
Presentation mode is on. Only organizers can be heard. Conversation mode is on. Everyone can now be heard.
Okay, so now it's on conversation mode. So if you do want to say thank you to Topher for sharing his wisdom, please take the opportunity right now.
Yes, thank you very much indeed for sharing this.
Thanks, Topher.
Thank you. It's my honor. I appreciate you guys giving me some time.
Thank you,
Topher. Thank you, Topher. You're lovely. Stay beautiful. Thanks. And not aspiring. Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Topher.
Thank you, Topher. And thank you, Damien.
Absolutely brilliant.
It's been great.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate
cool.
it.
Okay. Take care.